Hey, everybody. Did you miss me? I bet you did. Welcome back to Dustin's Vinyl. Very excited. We got the green screen today. See that? Look at the logo. Pretty exciting. I'm in a barn in Maine. That's right. We're traveling on the road. It's Dustin's Vinyl on the road. Very excited to be with you guys the day before Thanksgiving. I'm sure a lot of you are hanging out with your parents and family and extended family, and sometimes you need a break. And vinyl and records and music is really the best break away from a family. I don't know how many times music has saved me from my dysfunctional family. So I'm glad you guys are tuning in. Very excited. We have some good news coming up soon. We're going to be live on Twitch, which is coming out next week on Wednesdays. We'll be every Wednesdays at 7. Very excited for that. And we're going to be doing some live interaction stuff. So that'll be fun to interact with you guys live. So trying to get my studio thing going here. Let me do the random pull of the day. And might be playing because, I don't have my stuff with me. But this is a gentleman who I think saved country music, Mr. Chris Stapleton. This is a great album. This is from the A Room. If you don't know much about the A Room, it is the RCA studio in Nashville. It is probably one of the most famous, next to maybe Sun Studios, record studios of all time. A lot of people, everybody from the Beach Boys to Dolly Parton to Joe Cocker. It's something about the sound of the actual studio. Everybody says it's just like this place where it just kind of has this kind of vintage Nashville, sound. And a lot of people love recording there. And so Chris Stapleton, his first album, I believe, was Traveler, and this is kind of the follow-up. He did two albums from the A Room, which is the name of that studio, the RCA A Room. He did two albums. There's a volume one and two. This is the volume two. And if you don't know much about Chris Stapleton, you probably do by now, but he is an amazing songwriter. Like he has over 30 songs that are hits out from other people, from Kenny Chesney to Darius Rucker, to all these people, at least over 30 songs that he sold. And that's how he kind of got his start, was just, kind of writing songs for people. And he's an amazing, amazing songwriter. And his own stuff is amazing as well. It has just such soulful stuff. It reminds me of country in the 70s. And to me, that's the best country. Just all that kind of old school Waylon Jennings and, Merle Haggard and Kris Kristofferson. It kind of has all that kind of feel of a vintage country sound. This is a really cool album. It's got such good stuff. Midnight Train in Memphis, which is great. Friendship is a really good song, and Millionaire. All the songs on this are fantastic. And if you could get the volume set, which is volume one and two, it's a really, really good collection to have. So Chris Stapleton is just like one of those guys. There's certain guys that are kind of coming up. Sturgill Simpson and Chris Stapleton are guys that kind of, bring country back to the way it was, kind of just this, kind of blue collar kind of sound, not this fancy country that you see a lot today. You see a lot of like a slick country, where they where they got just the, the ponytails and the videos and the stuff. But this is really good stuff. So get you some Chris Stapleton. You won't go wrong with Chris. He's really a soulful, great country artist. And the thing is with him, he's kind of a crossover country guy as well. He opened, listen to this, he did a tour with Bob Seger, which makes a little bit of sense, but he also opened up for Guns N' Roses, which, just the idea of that concert tells you a little bit about, kind of how his music transcends. So he's a really cool musician. So get you some Chris Stapleton, and on vinyl, it's really good on vinyl because it has that kind of crackling sound that everybody needs to hear. So that is my pull of the day, Chris Stapleton. A great country musician. So very excited to share that with you guys. And I hope you go out there and get you the Room A series of Chris Stapleton. So that's our pool. Let's bring in the co-host, my main man in his blue closet. The man I love talking music with so much that we decided to do a show together. Ladies and gentlemen, good up for Jeffrey Paul in the building on the internet. What's up, buddy?
Yeah, this is supposed to be atmosphere for what we're going to talk about. But yeah. Hey, where would you put Dwight Yoakam in as a country artist? Would you say he's one of those slick guys, or is he an old school guy?
he's definitely an old school guy. I mean, he came up through Buck Owens and like all that kind of Bakersfield, Roy Clark and all that. He played with all those guys. So yeah, he's definitely, it was the last concert I saw. It was Dwight Yoakam. He's
great, right?
Yeah, he's fantastic. So he's definitely, yeah, he's kind of an old school guy that kind of, he keeps it twangy, and I like twangy old school country, yeah. You know. I don't want country to have too much, you know, like I said, slickness to it. Like, did you see that movie with, what was that country movie? The guy, Jeff, what's his name?
Jeff famous Buckley?
Actor. Famous oh, well, actor.
Jeff Bridges.
Jeff Bridges. Yeah. Did you see that movie?
Yes.
Great. No. What's the name of the movie? God, we should know these things. Two old guys trying to remember titles. Something about a country singer. He's on the road, plays bowling alleys.
the Great Lebowski?
Oh, shut up. Did you just say Great Lebowski? Yeah, really? Is that the country music movie?
Oh, I don't know. It's not even called the Great Lebowski. It's called the Big Lebowski. We can't even get the fucking title right.
It's something country music, something music. We'll get it right. Anyway, plays the country singer. But then there's like a young kind of, you know, guy. It's Colin Farrell plays the... what's his name? Oh my God, we can't think of any names. Anyway, it's got a ponytail. It just shows the difference between old school country and new country, and just kind of, you know, I don't know. I feel like the old stuff is kind of what we crave, and the new stuff is fun. There's some good pop stuff out there. I like a good Kenny Chesney song once in a while. I like a good Tim McGraw song, but you know, I would kind of stop after about 82. You know, a lot of my country just kind of dials back. I mean, Dwight Yoakam, I think, like you said, is somebody that, you know, he can do some modern, newer songs, and I'll kind of get into him. But his covers are great, too. He did a Purple Rain cover. Have you heard that? It's Purple Rain. So good.
Yeah.
But
when Prince died, everyone did, and he wound up doing it. I actually saw twice Paul Anka do Purple Rain in concert.
Nice. Chris Stapleton did it, too. Yeah. Chris Stapleton's good. That's such good stuff. I don't know. Try to get people hooked on him. But can you imagine that concert? Like Guns N' Roses?
That sounds like a great show, man. I would love that.
Well, that's such a good build. I think the problem I have with a lot of concerts is the opening band. I have this with comics, too. I have opening bands sound like, you know, they sound close to the, the headliner band. You could see like a lot of times a band will sound similar, and it's like, I want something completely different, you know?
100%. I couldn't agree with you more. Yes. Yeah,
this makes it more interesting.
One time I saw Queen on the Hot Space tour, and the opening act was Billy Squire.
Oh, I love Squire, man. Talk about a guy that like deserves to be in the conversation, but got, you know, lost in the 80s. He's fantastic. I still love all his, he has like 7 good hits. You know, they're fantastic.
Absolutely.
You know, struck
like that one video killed him.
What killed him?
That one video killed him.
Which one?
The Rock Me Tonight video.
Why did it kill him?
Oh, you never seen... Yeah, well, when you have to watch the video.
Well, talk to me. I'm talking to you. Why did it kill him?
Because he came across as such a mo.
What do you mean by mo? You're from Staten Island. I don't understand this language.
Okay, because he's like on a bed and satin sheets, and he's wriggling around on the bed and crawling. It's just like, it's like, ugh. Like, you see, it's like, dude.
You're trying to make him sexy? Box. Is that what?
I don't know what the fuck he was trying to do. He was trying to be sexy. He's wearing like a shirt, but the shirt's pulled down, and you can see his shoulder. And he's trying to be all like sultry. It's like, man, you know, you would never see, you know, like rock stars don't do that. Not you. And he just blew it.
That's really funny that you said that, because I think I don't know. I feel like Axl Rose, like I hate the, like my girl loves the Illusion stuff and Illusions or whatever. I hate those albums.
So do I.
Really? That video where he's like wearing like a tuxedo and the thing with the, you know how I feel about orchestra music.
Oh, so you don't like November Rain?
I hate that song. I don't like
it. Oh, God.
Yeah. I don't like it. Sorry, I just don't like it. I'm an Appetite for Destruction guy, and that's about it. That's where I tap out. That's where I tap out. I tap out. You know, they did their masterpiece, and that's it. You know, it's like Sex Pistols have one album. In my opinion, Guns N' Roses have one album. So
on Appetite, and not on Appetite, on Illusion, did you like You Could Be Mine?
It's okay. I mean, it's good. It just doesn't. It's pretty good. I like Appetite. I just don't. I can't. you know, I'm sure it's a good song and I have to like go through some shitty ones to get to it, but I just don't like the vibe of the band by them. And I think it's kind of like with this Billy Squire thing you're talking about. I feel like it's like they just got too popular and then that's when the music changes sometimes.
I'm going to send you the video. I'm sending you
I've seen it. I'm sure I've seen it. I know the song. I can hear it in my head.
It's a great song. Okay. The video stinks.
Okay, well, it's, you know, Appetite. That's all. I don't love Guns N' Roses, but I love Appetite for Destruction. I feel like that's a perfect album. It's a perfect rock album. Like it's from, you know, top to bottom. It's a perfect rock album. But
it's a great album.
I don't know. I've seen Axl live and like he choked out after four songs and couldn't sing anymore. Like he can't do a lot of that stuff live that he was doing on the album. You know, and so it's like, you know, it's like he's just like in the back drinking tea while Slash is doing a 40-minute solo. You know, it's like I'm just not a fan of all the drama of Guns N' Roses and all that crap. I just, you know, I just like the one album. You know, that's just me. It's like I'm sure there's some. I mean, you know, even the last one, there was a couple of songs on it that were terrible. Was it Chinese Democracy or something?
I didn't like that album.
There's a couple that were okay. It was, it was way overproduced, you know.
100%.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Well, what the album that we're going to talk about today, did you get a chance to listen to it?
I did.
Let's do it, man. Let's talk about Rush 2112. What'd you think?
You know, it's a great album. It's it doesn't even feel like rock. It feels more like a Mozart or something. You know, it feels there's anything that opens with an overture.
Very true. Yes,
it's you know, it's a whole other thing, and it's kind of spacey and weird, and I you know that this you know they were so funny back then. You know, with these outfits.
Let's talk about this for a second because this is their fourth studio album, and the story with this. This is a band that's on my Mount Rushmore. If I only have four bands, it's Iron Maiden, Black Sabbath, Rush, and The Smiths. Okay. But the story with this was the album before this was called Caress of Steel. And they were on the verge of dropping Rush from the label. They were recorded for Mercury. And their Caress of Steel had two minor hits. It had Lakeside Park and Bastille Day. And their A&R guy kind of like said, let's just give them a chance. Let's give them one more chance. And this is what they produced, man. 2112. It comes out. What I like about this, that it was recorded in February of 1976, and it's released in April of 76. So, I mean, they just like 2 months and bang, it's out. It opens to great reviews. It's number 5 on the Canadian charts, number 61 on the Billboard charts. And it's the lyrics, the story is written by drummer Neil Peart, who later on writes all their lyrics. And the music is by Alex Lifeson and Geddy Lee. And it's to me, it's their masterpiece. Like you said, you know, it is Mozart. It's, you know, the first side is an over 20 minute just story. It's a futuristic science fiction story that takes place in the year 2112. Listen, you got to listen to this with headphones on.
I did. That's what I did today. On vinyl with headphones. I mean, how perfect is that? That's the 70s. That's exactly how it was supposed to be right there.
You know what? I'm going to reveal something to you. I can't believe I'm going to put this out there.
Put it out there. This is about vulnerability. Man.
Yeah, I'm taking a leap here. Me and my friends, what we used to do when this came out, we were in high school, maybe freshmen in high school. We used to smoke weed, put this album on, then go into, because it sounds so gay, we'd go into the his parents' bedroom. And
no gayer than this image.
That's pretty gay.
With a naked dude.
Okay, we weren't naked, but what we would do is the parents had like this big king size bed, and we would go on it and just like shut the lights and just fight. We would wrestle and we fight until the end of 2112. So you get punched in the eye. Like we come out of there sweaty and bruised.
Wow. That's hilarious.
There's so much Staten Island male aggression going on.
So, as long as nothing popped out, you're good.
Yeah. Yes. Clothes stayed on. I did feel a bony pickle once in a while, but
you know, I appreciate you sharing that with me. We've all had them weird moments, you know. And Rush is one of those bands, you know. It's like they don't judge, so they're right.
And Adam, I think, said this last week on the show, and I agree with him when he said that this is one of only two bands that you can wear the shirt when you go to the concert.
Oh my God, you two with your rules. Who cares?
It's a rule.
It's not a rule. It doesn't matter.
If me and you are going to a Guns N' Roses concert, you can't wear a
Everybody
Guns N' Roses
wears shirt. The GNR shirt.
No.
Yes, they do. I've seen it. I've been to a GNR show. Everybody wears it.
Well, they're wrong. You got to wear an Aerosmith shirt.
How are they wrong? Who are you to say they're wrong? Somebody out there loves Iron, and it's only the bands you love, which is really like kind of, you know, fascist in your rock and roll vibe. It's only Iron Maiden and Rush. And only Rush, the bands that you love the most.
I like Sabbath. I wouldn't wear a Sabbath shirt to a Sabbath concert.
Who cares what you wear, man? No, I'm not there for the people.
I wear my Judas Priest shirt. Or I wear my Deep Purple shirt.
But
why? Why would you say that about Judas Priest?
But you're not there for the people. You're there for the band. So for you people out there that wear your shirts to all the shows, who cares? Nobody cares. Only Jeff and Adam, apparently. I don't care. Well, I'd say I would wear this to a Gary Clark Jr. show. I don't give a shit. I'd wear whatever, man. I don't care.
In the comments, when people watch us, please just could people like just put your opinion. Do you wear the shirt of the band that you go see? But let's talk about 2112. It's it's about individualism. It's about creativity, being outlawed. Okay. And a population that is controlled by these priests that live in the Temple of Syrinx.
I'm glad you explained this because I don't understand any of it. I just know there's some good guitar riffs and some great drumming. That's really all I get from it.
No, it's a story. It's a whole story. That's what
Please
it is.
Please tell me because I don't get it at all.
So, you know, it starts, you know, like you said, it starts with the overture, which is amazing, and then goes into the Temple of Syrinx. And it's the introduction of the priest, and they're telling you what's allowed, what isn't allowed. And, you know, again, no music, no, you know, in the Vatican, you listen, you're going to be told what to do. And then the second song, it's all one big opus, is called The Discovery. And there's a man, and there's no name to this guy. And he finds an old beaten guitar, and you know it because you hear Running Water. And then you hear him like, you know, fiddle with the guitar, and like you hear the effects. That's why it's great to listen to it with headphones on.
Yeah.
And he's plucking at the strings. There's no song, just plucking at the strings. And, you know, music is rediscovered. So then he takes the guitar to the priests and he's like, look what I found. And you Geddy Lee, when he's singing the part of the man, he's singing it like, you know, like very like softly, like, you know, you can't believe I found this. And then when the priests come in, it's like, yes, we know it's nothing new. It's all just a waste of time.
Yeah. You know, he still sounds like a chick both times, but he's amazing.
Well, he sings in a range that no one else could sing at, you know? I mean, and the thing, he's doing this while playing bass and playing keyboards with his like his elbows, you know? I mean, he's playing keyboards, bass, singing at the same time. Sure. Oh my God. Three guys making all that sound.
Yeah,
and then the next part of it is something called the Oracle. And the Oracle is like a dream. And the dream is this guy realized like, what would it be to be like in a world where creative people live? And he realizes that the world that he lives in now, it's forbidden. And then he kills himself.
Wow.
You know, because he don't want to live in a world like that. And then it ends with this grand finale and you hear like all type of sounds and then there's like an interplanetary fight. And it ends with like an announcement. Like, you know, something out of 1984, and you hear like over and over again, attention, all planets of the Solar Confederation. We've assumed control.
Unbelievable.
We have assumed control.
Kind
and
of
that's how
like
Side
this,
One ends.
It sounds like this past election. You know what I mean? That's how I felt.
It's there are so many parallels to what's going on in the world now with what's going on in Russia's future version of what the world is. And Next Side 2 is just a straight up album. And there are five songs, but there are two songs that stand out to me. Passage to Bangkok, which is a great song. It takes you on a journey.
I love that little... He does a little kind of Asian sound in the middle. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And that was basically inspired by the Zeppelin song Kashmir. Mm. And it's really a song about going to all these different places to find weed. That's
See, I thought it was inspired about. By, I think I'm turning Japanese.
And then, and yeah, okay, that's good. And then you have
the song. Fun here, Jeff. Keep going. You're doing great.
Yeah, then you have the song The Twilight Zone. And it's because they were huge Ron Sterling fans. In fact, the album before that we just mentioned, Caress of Steel, is dedicated to Ron Sterling. You know, because he had just passed away when that album came out. Mm. So they, and in fact, two episodes are even referenced on it. It's, you know, they talk about the episode where the guy has the eye, you know, remember, you know, the Martian.
Yeah.
Were you a Twilight Zone guy?
I was. Yeah, I still am. I don't feel like I've seen all of them though, but I try to watch as much as I can.
Yeah, on usually on New Year's they do
marathons. Marathon. Fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I love them. I do. I love all that stuff. You see such great actors in it and stuff. It's great.
Right. So, yeah. So Rush was really, they loved The Twilight Zone. So they did a song where they referenced a couple of songs in him. So you can see where Neil Peart gets his inspiration from. You know, he was this visionary. He was more than just the best drummer who ever lived. He was an amazing, amazing writer. And all these guys are off the charts talented.
Sure. Yeah, it's, you know, Rush is one of those bands that, you know, there's a lot of multi-layered things happening with Rush. You know, it's like Rush came out when I was first exposed to Rush. It was probably Moving Pictures, and it's another situation where I felt like their best song wasn't the song that they played over and over, which is Tom Sawyer. And so I feel like that's how I was introduced, was by this song over and over and over. And then eventually I, you know, other albums kind of came up into my life. I love this album. I think this is a great album as well. And, you know, I'm not like one of these, like, you know, nerdy Rush fans where I, you know, kind of like went to all the, I never seen them in concert or anything, but it's one of those bands where it's like, you know, the more you listen to it, you get it, you know. And I really loved, I saw their Hall of Fame induction, and that was pretty cool, and just watching, you know, them play and stuff. And so I'm getting more into Rush, I think, the older I get. It's kind of one of those bands that kind of, you know, I feel like there's definitely, they're not a sexy band. So I can see, like, when you're like a young teenager, it really depends on, you know, where I feel like this is what would have happened to Van Halen if David Lee Roth hadn't come along. Like, there's something about this band that's like, they don't give a shit about anything but just the music. Agreed. Like, it's not about this sex appeal and getting girls. And you go to the shows, I'm sure it's mostly guys.
It's no girls.
Yeah.
Is Adam here? Adam,
we need you.
Adam, have you ever seen Rush in concert?
No, I've always wanted to. I've been by Prudential when the concert has happened, but I haven't actually been to one.
Yeah, no, because Dustin said that something. I just wanted a little reinforcement on this. Yeah, there is no line for the women's room at the Rush concert.
It's like a Steve Vai show. Yeah, there's no chicks.
Exactly. Yeah.
Same thing with Maiden also.
Yeah, there are certain bands that just kind of appeal to, you know, the youth of men, you know, young guys and whatever. But yeah, it's, you know, it's listening to this album today, because I haven't heard it in a long time. Some of the songs I hadn't heard at all, because it's like you just heard whatever hits you heard as a kid on the radio. But it's a great, great album. It's really, I mean, they're so talented. Just the drum, because you could pick out different things. Like, if you just concentrate on the drumming, you're just like, you're in awe by nobody's ever drummed like that ever in the history of time. I mean, you can compare drummers. It's just, you're not going to compare to Neil Peart. Like, he's just one of those guys. Like, he's the Jimi Hendrix of the drums. Like, he's just that guy. And so it's nice when you can just kind of enjoy that and kind of like focus in on it. You know, it's beautiful. And like, yeah, I said, it's, you know,
when you, the beginning, like when the overture really kicks in and you're hearing the power that he's playing with, but then there's also like the fills that he's doing, you know, and it's like you, some drummers like Keith Moon played on a small traditional kit. When you look at what Neil Peart was playing on.
Oh, I remember I saw that as a kid. It was phenomenal. Yeah, remember
you were surrounded by the drums.
Out of those gongs.
You know, millions of like little tom-tom drums, you know. And then you had Alex Lifeson, who was always overlooked, but an amazing guitar player. And the lead that he does during the overture and Temples of Syrinx are just... Yeah. They're just so good. And like you said, they didn't care about image. They didn't care about chicks. It was all about the music and telling this story.
Yeah. You know, I'm not going to lie. It's taken me probably how many years on this earth to really get used to Getty's voice. Sometimes it kind of pierces me a little bit. I feel like he's a guy that could break a glass with his voice. Like it's definitely takes the appreciation of the entire band to really get on board with Rush, where I could see where, you know, that might have been why, you know, some people might not have been into Rush is a little bit, because I think musically it's perfect, but sometimes that voice is, you know, it's you really got to love this band and really, you know, to kind of like be okay with that. That's that high. I mean, I don't know if he has testicles. Like, it's the highest voice I've ever heard in my life from a man. It's like Michael Jackson pipes, you know. It's like, it's unbelievable how high he gets for a rock guy. I mean, you know, I mean, it's, I don't know. That's something that it's taken me a while. If I were to not listen to Rush, it was like because of that. Like, it's taken me, you know, I'm maturing as a music person, but that's one thing. It took me a while. That's why I'm not probably as big of a Rush guy as you are. Just it took me a long time to kind of gravitate towards that because of that. Because his voice sometimes a little grating.
There are a required taste or an acquired taste.
Yeah.
They're definitely not for everybody. But I don't think there's any denying just how great they are musically.
I just want to interrupt one thing. You know, it's interesting, though, listening to this album particularly. And because last week you said you don't like jam bands, I think they're definitely a jam band, and not maybe a bluesy jam, but they jam. I mean, they there's like songs that are.
But they're hard.
Still jam band. They're still jam. I know, but you said I don't like jam bands, and I would put them in kind of another category of jam band, but it's still a jam band. I think it's like Tool, in my opinion, is a jam band, but I think Rush is kind of close to that. You know, I don't know.
If you listen to,
I mean, it's not Fish, but you know.
No, but if you listen to like albums like Hemispheres and Moving Pictures, I mean, there is a couple of like instrumentals. Does that necessarily make you a jam band where there's no structure, where you're kind of like all over the place? And not there's anything wrong with it, but like I can never listen to like a jam of Dave Matthews Band.
You keep hating on my boy Dave, and I don't like it.
Because it's lawyer music. it's lawyer music. It's like, let's get crazy on casual Friday and wear our khakis and put on some Dave Matthews and Ants Marching.
The guy can play. There's certain guys that can play.
He can play.
We'll fight you for him. I think when the song is more than four or five minutes.
Dave Matthews.
I don't love Dave Matthews. I just don't want to, I just think everybody contributes. And I think a guy like that has contributed, to the world of music. And it's like, I don't know. I can see some people just get caught up in bad PR and stuff. I don't know. There's just good bands that get kind of caught up in, like, Nickelback is a good band. And they get shit on.
Why?
Creed is a decent band. Creed is good.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're the only one, Jeff, that knows that these two bands don't get shit on. Adam knows.
No, yeah, they definitely get shit on.
No, I know they get shit on. I just don't think it's right that they get shit on.
Why do they think Dave Matthews should get shit on? It's a certain kind of music. It's folk music. Who gives a shit if college kids like it? Who gives a shit?
Dave Matthews is not the same as Creed.
I bet they have as many hits.
Well, they probably have more hits.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think I saw Creed and Seven Dust. You know, they played together. And Creed opened up with What If, and it was so hard, and it was so good. It's not nothing like Dave Matthews.
I saw Dave Matthews.
Some guy played a fiddle
with Macy Gray and at MetLife, and it was a great show. And they had a guy playing
a
fiddle.
How much did they pay you to go to that show?
They didn't pay me. I did to get free tickets, but I... I think next to Hendrix, he does one of the best Along the Watchtowers. Like, I think it's a fantastic cover. It's a beautiful, beautiful cover of that. I think they do a great job.
It is a good cover. It's better than U2's version. I'll tell you that.
Exactly. U2 does the worst covers. They should never do a cover ever. They're the worst cover. Helter Skelter, my God. Anyway, Rattle and Hum is a disaster. But, back to Rush. But I think a real music guy likes Rush. And I think that's why, you know, it's like, it's, you know, kind of one of those bands that just kind of been around. And did you see their induction to the Hall of Fame? It was really cool.
Of course. First of all, I hate the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because of their politics and who they put in. And it took so much lobbying for them to get in. And the guy who inducted them was the guy who kept, you know, talking, you know, every year, putting pressure, Dave Grohl and Foo Fighters.
Yeah. That was really cool, kind of what he said too. And he kind of made fun of them with their, you know, outfits and shit. It was really, really great. their Luke Skywalker outfits.
It was the 90s. This was 76?
Yeah, but it's different though. I mean, Robert Plant was wearing shit like this, but he looked good in it. Like this, these guys, they're dorks. They're music dorks. They're not really rock stars. They're music dorks. They're geniuses, but they're not rock stars. It's a whole other thing.
I got to call you out on the Robert Plant thing, though. Robert Plant looked cool in it. He was wearing like a girl's top. He was wearing like little tops.
Yeah, you go call some of your old girlfriends and you tell me that Robert Plant didn't look great in the 70s. Okay.
Who was cooler? He wasn't Ozzy. Ozzy didn't look cool. Ozzy looked like a maniac.
Robert Plant was fucking awesome. Are you busting on Robert Plant? Like, I mean, he looked great. Like, what are you talking about? He had the perfect metal hair. Come on, dude. It's like, what are you talking about?
He wore like a girl's shirt.
Yeah, did every band in the 70s.
Ozzy did it. Not Ozzy.
Aerosmith. I mean, come on, man. We go all day with this. Like,
I don't know. I just hate this shit. Like, everyone, like, you know, like, would praise Zeppelin. I love Zeppelin, but everyone would praise Zeppelin and then just, like, you know, and say, like, oh, Sabbath isn't in the conversation. Of course, Sabbath was in the conversation.
Nobody's talking about Sabbath right now. We all love Sabbath. We're just, these are dorks. Sorry. They're geniuses, but they're dorks.
I'm gonna reveal something.
Might even be
else.
On the spectrum. That's how good they are.
I'm going to reveal something else to you, man. This show's like therapy for me today. When I was in high school, like in 1979, Ozzy had left Sabbath. And I remember just like being really like I was really upset about it. And I was like at a party and this girl was talking to me and I was like, oh man, but you know, like, I don't know, Ozzy left. And she's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, yeah, they're getting this guy, Ronnie James Dio. I don't even know who he is. Is Sabbath guy? She's like, why are you always talking about Sabbath? I used to wear like a Sabbath, like a denim jacket with the cross on the back. It said Sabbath.
Do you have a mullet or a rat tail? What'd you rock?
Mullet.
Nice.
Mullet. And in my high school graduation picture, I mean, it's out there here. It is long. It's like Bon Jovi. Like, it's really...
We have to bring those pictures up. That's what we're going to have to do because I got crazy pictures too.
Yeah, I will bring it up. I think by next week. You know, I'll have some time. I'm going to do it this week.
How did you get into like older rock? Do you have like a brother or a dad or something that got you into this stuff? Like, how do you have a really great palette of music? I'm just curious where it comes.
Yeah, it was my dad. He had a massive vinyl and especially CD. When CDs came out, he would just, I mean. He probably had thousands. And so that's how I got into a lot of it. And a lot of the classic rock. I mean, Pink Floyd's one of my favorite bands. I didn't get into them until freshman year of college. And
what album was it?
So they were touring Pulse at the time. So that was 95. So it was right after Division Bell.
Great
and,
album. High Hopes.
Yeah, I never got it. And I just missed them. They played Giant Stadium. I got into them. I was like, oh, I'll see them on their next tour. And that was it. I've seen Waters a bunch of times. I've seen...
Did you see him recently, like the past couple of years? And I heard that show was amazing.
Yeah, I saw him. I think the last time was probably during the Wall tour. I know he did the Us and Them tour. I missed out on that one.
Yeah, he really hated on Trump.
Yeah.
That's why I'm a Gilmore guy.
But yeah, that's, you know, I...
Did your dad take you to shows at all, like early on?
No, later in his life, we actually went to a bunch of shows, but not really early on. I think it was mostly... There was a stretch of, I think it was probably freshman year to junior year of college, where I was just listening to nonstop classic rock.
Nice.
So that was around probably like the mid-90s.
Yeah, I felt like with the grunge was actually, you know, really good for classic rock, because I think a lot of when grunge came out, all these kids are like, da, da, da. And then it's like, then they had such a source to go back to. I think that's when they remastered like a lot of Led Zeppelin and, you know, different music that was Sabbath, even like stuff like that, that was similar to what was happening.
Well, Sabbath had gotten like all the credit for inspiring Soundgarden. And if you remember, Pearl Jam, even I think went on tour with Neil Young, because they had always credited Neil Young. And he kind of got like the reputation of being the father of grunge.
Yeah, absolutely. The flannel and everything.
Right. but the stuff that he did with Crazy Horse, remember?
That's a great album, yeah.
Yeah. Adam, going back to Pink Floyd for a second. Would you say, like, everyone talks about The Wall and Dark Side of the Moon being like their you know, that top album. I really love Wish You Were Here.
Yeah.
You know? I think the song itself is great, but I also think like the recording of like a song like Time and Have a Cigar, you know, they're great, great songs. And like, the beginning, you know, I think Shine On Your Crazy Diamonds on that too, you know, an ode to Syd Barrett. I love the diversity in the album.
I think everybody talks about The Wall, 'cause when you hear it, it changes your life. Like that album, I mean, it's the movie blows me away. Like it still affects me in a way that's just, music has never done that, what The Wall does to me. You know, just listen, and the Dark Side of the Moon too, man. Just like talk about a headphone listener, like listen to that with the headphones and the vinyl. Like that's a beautiful album.
I think you're right about what you said about The Wall. I think The Wall is kind of like Thriller. I mean, like when The Wall was at its height, remember, nothing
speaks to you a little more than a Thriller, though. I mean,
but I'm just talking about how it just like dominated everything. It dominated all the charts. All everybody talked about and all on the radio was everything on The Wall. It was so huge.
Yeah, but you started to understand things through The Wall. You know, kind of the bullshit and government and war and people and just
and addiction.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and chicks, and the chicks and all that stuff is great. And even being successful, it's like, it's, you know, you can still be fucked up. And like, you know, it's such a great, great album.
Well, bring it back to 2112, because, you know, it's also talking about isolation, you know. So I think there are parallels there. And I think, you know, I would love for like younger people, I hope there are some younger people who listen to this and really give this album a chance, because I really think like this story and what we're talking about here really holds up today. It's almost like a cross, like you said, between like Beethoven and meets George Orwell.
Yeah. With, you know, just it's musically, it really is kind of, you know, it's really has just kind of a symphony vibe to it. It's beautiful.
It's but like, it's like the whole futuristic thing. Yeah, go
ahead. The thing is, Rush would never have to have a backup symphony band because they are kind of a symphony band to me. You know what I mean? Like every like Metallica and Guns N' Roses, all these bullshit. They you know, I hate that. Like they don't have to do that because they make that sound with three guys. Like they didn't need to do that. They didn't need to make it bigger because they were already, it was big enough in the sound, you know. So that's what's really cool about them.
Yeah, and then the thing is, like, you know, this album, like I said, became successful, and they stayed on the label, and they wound up having this Hall of Fame career.
Yeah, they're a good band. They're Rush, man. It's like, you know, I feel like it's, you know, I remember seeing so many jean jackets with Rush on it, and it was a certain kind of guy. It was always in the smoking section in high school. You know? That's how old we are, Adam. We had smoking sections in our high school. you could just show up and smoke a butt like right before first period.
Yep. Smoking.
Did you have a smoking section?
No, you had to.
I know you didn't, but Jeff,
no, you had to sneak them out.
A smoking section in high school?
Yeah, did you have one?
No, I was kind of like Adam. We used to have to smoke in the woods.
We had a freaking smoking section.
And in your school? Know,
in our school. Like I swear to God, it was a gated thing. And it was like a smoking section. And you could go over there and smoke a cigarette. The kids, it was high school.
We also had
a rodeo team. Like Texas is fucking off the rails. Like they don't. But it was always a kid in a Rush jacket, you know, smoking a cigarette. It was always the thing.
He got it.
It was this. This was the. I feel like this was the, you know, the image that was everywhere that I, you know, that was just everywhere. Everybody had
that image. Look at Neil Peart's mustache.
Yeah, dude.
How 70s is that?
It's got the wax. Yeah, the little wax thing. I never trust a guy that has a little wax mustache.
No, that mustache screams you. You could smell who he was with the night before.
That's what's so great about, you know. And you know, it's like I don't know, like the band, the Struts, we were talking about. It's like, you know, just like that's what I miss about the '70s, you know. And that band kind of brings back some of that vibe. But
they were far from a glam band. There was nothing scream glam about these guys.
They tried. I mean, they're trying right now. It's just not, they're not executing.
I don't know what, honestly,
they're really trying to be glam.
Are they wearing geese? I don't know. Like,
okay. Somebody's wife dressed them. That's usually how it always is. It's always some chick in the band, groupie, whatever. It was a chick involved at some point. It always is. And then it's like, hey, you know, here, use my top, you know. Like, so, I'm sure these are actual girl tops at some point. That's hilarious, yeah. Well, they did the Bangkok thing, the Bangkok song. It was like, well, we got to represent because we got the Bangkok song on here. So we're going to bang out the gi. Pretty cool. And then I think it's an actual gi. I don't know. Maybe he's a white. I think Getty might be a white belt, and
through a phase. Yeah, maybe they're all taking karate lessons, and they're like, okay,
right? They're like, oh shit, we got a photo shoot, and then they just ran out and got it. But good band. Thanks for you know, letting me explore them again, because you know, like I always have records, but I just don't really appreciate them as much as I should. You know, like this. You know, I got Rush records. I got Moving Pictures somewhere, but.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah. Signals, that's a good one too. I like Signals.
Signals,
I
think that was good too, yeah.
That was a popular one in Texas or whatever when we were growing up.
They had the hit Subdivisions on it.
Yeah. I just remember the Dalmatian peeing on a fire hydrant. That's all I remember. Sometimes you just remember the album covers. You don't remember any of the music. And that's how it is with Rush, because every song is kind of great, but you don't, I can't really pick out too many Rush songs, you know. But, you know, when you hear them, you definitely appreciate them.
Absolutely. So, Adam, what's new on vinyl? What's coming out this week? Thanksgiving week, Black Friday.
Let me get my notes out here. There's
Adam. Yeah, new segment. We like it. New theme music or something.
Well, I mean, this Friday is Record Store Day for Black Friday, and nice. There's probably about 100 releases though. And plus on top of all these bands releasing new albums too. I mean, the Smashing Pumpkins have Seer, their double album coming out on Friday, which, awesome. supposed to be a completely different sound for them too. It's more of a pop album.
We should cover that. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, at one point I heard it was a kind of a spiritual sequel to Melancholy, but,
that's my favorite album by them.
Yeah. It's a great, great album. They also have a second album coming out on vinyl on Friday called Pure Acoustic. And it's a collection of acoustic songs recorded in 91 and 93. So during Gish and Siamese Dream. And I guess I think it's the first time out on vinyl. So looks like a pretty good one.
That sounds great.
Let's see what else we got.
That's their grunge days too.
Yeah. 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 Early 90s. And the song list looks incredible for it.
Is it unreleased stuff or is it they're just stuff on acoustic, like a unplugged kind of thing?
Well, I think it was stuff from what I read, it was stuff they recorded in 93. I don't know if it was, I think it's been out on CD before.
Oh, okay.
I think it might be the first time it's out on vinyl.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Billy Corgan used to release, like he recorded everything. He was a lot like Prince in that regard.
Yeah.
And he would release everything. And some stuff, you know, is better off not being released. You know, it kind of waters down the product, you know, so I'm kind of curious about that. Is he releasing, like Dustin said, are they going to be kind of like acoustic versions of songs like, you know, how much more acoustic could Disarm be, you know?
Right. And Disarm is on there too.
Or Today.
Yeah.
You know?
Just like with our Weezer episode, you know, sometimes it's like, if you're a fan, you're going to love it, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like, I'm sure it's going to be great.
Well, he was touring recently, this is before the recent Smashing Pumpkins tour where they were doing it. I think it was more stripped down. It wasn't completely acoustic, but it was more stripped down.
Okay.
And this is just with, it was him and Jimmy Chamberlain. This is before James Iha came back. But all these are stuff they recorded in the early 90s.
Nice.
Well, it's very good.
Let's see what else we got. David Gilmour.
What you got over there, boy? What you got?
David Gilmour's got a new song. Yes, I Have Ghosts. It's a 7-inch. It's coming out. It's his first new one in 5 years. So a little bit of Pink Floyd there. But
nice.
There's Alanis Morissette is a double LP live at London's O2 Shepherd's Bush Empire, where she does all of Jagged Little Pill for the 25th anniversary.
I would love to hear that.
Yeah, and it's that one's acoustic also.
You like Alanis, Jeff?
Yes, I do. I've seen her a couple times.
That's right, I forgot. You like Jewel, so you like all that chick kind of angst rock.
Yes, I like Canadian. I like Canadian chicks with big tits.
Who live in cars. Okay, cool.
Gotcha. And you know, she was doing that the 25th anniversary Jagged Little Pill tour. With I think it was her, Liz Phair, and Garbage. It would have been an incredible show. And
they toured together at one point. I saw them both together. Yeah,
nice.
And you know, that got postponed because of COVID. But I think they rescheduled for next year though.
Nice. She was also married to Ryan Reynolds for a short stint.
Yeah. Wait, when did this become The View? thank you. Checking in.
Star Deadpool. I don't know if you might know.
I love Deadpool. Are you crazy? That's one of my favorite movies in the lately. Movie.
I'll get TJ on here. We'll do a cameo.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
There's let's see what else. There's Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, cover album just dropped in to see what condition my rendition is in. So it's 12 cover songs. Look like a pretty good one.
What else you got?
All right, we got Chris Cornell with Patience. So it's a 7-inch single, Patience, and the side of Nothing Compares to You, which was
that's great. Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah, they played on Sirius XM all the time. It's really good.
Yeah,
cover.
He did a live one at Sirius, and it was phenomenal. That video is great. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't heard his cover of Patience, but I imagine it's going to be pretty good. Let's see. There's Willie Nelson live at Austin City Limits, 1976. The first audio release. He does Redheaded Stranger front to back.
Nice.
So he's probably the artist.
I've seen the most live. Probably I've seen him like 4 times. He's fantastic.
Yeah, I think this one was his... this might have actually been the first Austin City Limits episode, too.
Oh, awesome.
This one I just said first. I got
Willie Nelson one. Lyrics on my arm.
Oh, Willie, nice.
Willie's the shit, man.
Let's see. I'm kind of jumping around here. Oh, one of my favorite bands, The Hold Steady. They're putting out Heaven Is Whenever, the 10th anniversary double LP. And it's not one of my favorite albums of theirs, but it's definitely worth a revisit. They got 9 additional songs on it too. And they have a bunch of songs. They're actually next week, they're playing 3 nights at Brooklyn Bowl. It's just going to be a live stream, but I'm sure a lot of these songs will be on it. All their albums are really just bar rock, solid bar rock.
Nice. I like that bar rock. Yeah.
We won't be doing that for a while. But
right.
no more bars and rock for quite a while.
Good. Yeah.
This is a great show, man. Very excited for next week. We're going to be doing a live show. You guys stick around after the show so we can talk about a few things. But very excited. You guys can interact with us, which is going to be fun. It's like you guys can dispute all the craziness and we can just rip on Jeff and his blue background. I go to such great lengths. We're gonna get you a poster back there.
But does it look like I'm in 2112? Like I'm in space now.
Yeah. No, it just looks like you're in a corner. In your house.
No one puts Jeff in the corner.
Awesome. Thank you guys for watching the show. Very excited. Get you some Rush. All the albums are amazing. This is definitely a spectacular album. And thanks you for supporting us. And we'll see you on Twitch next week. All right, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.